You want to know who killed Dietrichson? Hold tight to that cheap cigar of yours, Keyes.
Remember this?
I killed Dietrichson. Me, Walter Neff.
Double indemnity.
Insurance salesman. 35 years old, unmarried, no visible scars.
1944.
Until a while ago, that is.
When it came time to score the finished film, its director, Billy Wilder, suggested nervous, edgy music with a restless string figure. And he called on composer Miklos Rozsa, who was happy to oblige.
So I let her have it straight between the eyes.
Just a few months earlier, Rozsa's concert piece, Theme, Variations, and Finale, had been played by the New York Philharmonic under young Leonard Bernstein, famously filling in at the last minute for the ailing Bruno Walter. And that's how it was for Rozsa for the next many decades. Dozens of film scores for Hollywood on the one hand, and concert pieces, 45 opus numbers worth, on the other. And for the most part, Miklos Rozsa's film music overshadowed his concert music. Until now, when his serious music is coming out of the shadows with a vengeance, you might say. Miklos Rozsa was part of what amounted to a community of displaced persons.
The German film industry essentially continued its life in Southern California.
John Waxman is a film music historian. His father was the Hollywood composer Franz Waxman.
Probably the single most important event in the lives of Max Steiner, Eric Korngold, Miklos Rozsa, and Franz Waxman, and others, was Hitler and the fact that they got out and were drawn to Hollywood. All of UFA Studios, the main creative people, ended up in Los Angeles in 1935.
The Hungarian-born Rozsa had, like many of his colleagues, been classically trained, headed for a career as a serious musician. But he adapted well to filmmaking, which he always said was a composite art, and film music, he said, should be written this way. Which is not to say he didn't fight for his music like the rest of the Hollywood composers.
Their fight was in the dubbing room, where the director was trying to have the train go through the station and you don't hear the passacaglia. So the composer is sitting in the dubbing room saying, you know, let's lower the volume of the gunshots.
Goodbye, baby.
Rozsa used the theremin in his music for Spellbound and The Lost Weekend. He was nominated for 18 Oscars and won 3, including one for his monumental score to Ben-Hur. But the composite art of film was not enough for him. Rozsa never failed to carve out time to write serious, non-composite, non-film music. Toward the end of his career, he even had it written into his contract with MGM, 3 months a year off, dedicated to the other half of his double life, the serious half. The irony of musical life and musical tastes in this period is that while these cultured, gifted Europeans were writing tuneful, romantic music for American movies, music was moving in quite another direction.
There was a dichotomy in the 30s and 40s between composers in Hollywood and composers in New York.
Sarah Davis Buchner has recorded the complete Rozsa piano music.
These people out in Hollywood writing late Straussian opie, shall we say, were looked down upon by the New York community, who viewed themselves as much more serious, writing difficult atonal scores.
But geography wasn't the whole story. After all, it was right there at the University of Southern California that Arnold Schoenberg had been appointed professor of composition.
The legions of, I think, somewhat guilty film composers flocked to him for lessons.
But Rozsa did not. He had an intense dislike for the current trend. So he made his living as a terrifically successful film composer and, in the Hollywood tradition, was typecast. He wasn't alone.
These composers who also conducted
John Waxman
wanted to go out and bring this repertoire to American audiences, and there were no takers. And if they ever got engagements, mostly they were asked to conduct the film music, which of course was not the point.
Rozsa had a coterie of friends, including Heifetz and Piatigorsky, who lived out in California, who championed his music. But he was not wholly successful in pushing his music to other orchestras or indeed even abroad, where his name was very, very much forgotten by the 1960s. In Hungary, when he finally took a visit there, nobody knew exactly who he was.
As for the music itself, well, time has passed, and it's everywhere. The piano sonata of 1948, for example, written about a year before the score to Madame Bovary.
From the moment that sonata starts, with its single two lines spaced widely apart between the hands, we have the sense that we're going to go on some dramatic journey.
And the violin concerto, a gorgeous piece written for and with the collaboration of none other than Yasha Heifetz in the early 50s. The concerto disappeared from the repertoire until recently. According to Yoel Levy, music director of the Atlanta Symphony, whose beautiful Telarc recording of the piece has just been released to a flurry of attention, there's one more reason for the piece's relative obscurity.
The only problem is that it's a very difficult concerto, but it's absolutely a masterpiece.
Miklós Rozsa made a great point of insisting that his film work be viewed separately from his classical work. It seems now as if one very much fed the other.
I think there's a real wholeness to his body of work. I think he made this distinction between the two idioms mostly for his own sense of professional survival, that he wanted people to take him seriously.
Rozsa was a composer caught in the middle at a strange moment. His complex, sophisticated film scores were often too difficult for the studio heads in Hollywood. His concert music too melodic and accessible for a world looking for something new. Funny, the music that emerges and the music that doesn't.
I think we are much more open today to really rediscover the true qualities of composers. And it doesn't matter if they wrote great film music as well as they wrote great concert music.
We're living in an age where the real crisis of composers is how to reach an audience. Well, here's a real model.
The Koch label has released the complete Rozsa piano music as performed by Sarah Davis Buchner, as well as numerous orchestral and chamber recordings of Rozsa's music. Yoel Levy's violin concerto recording with the Atlanta Symphony and soloist Robert McDuffie is on the Telarc label. When it comes to Rozsa, it's time, finally, 5 years after his death at age 88, to get serious. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.